Hi all, please note, these are generally conversations between adults after the children have left the table. The language can be spicy and the subjects can get saucy. So if you're ready, so am I. You are listening to The Southern Fork, a podcast that hosts kitchen chats with some of the most interesting people in the culinary South. I'm your host, Stephanie Burt, and I'm always hungry to learn more. Let's dig in.
The Southern Fork is supported by the Center for Women, a nonprofit organization that serves to help educate and advocate so women in South Carolina can be leaders. This organization, along with the culinary group Bad Bitches Charleston, has been instrumental in bringing this podcast to life, and their programs from leadership development to financial management empower women to take the steps necessary to realize their goals. Women like me. Visit c4women.org for more information.
Blackberry Farm in Tennessee is a magical place to visit, but imagine working there, and imagine working there developing beer. If that sounds too good to be true, well, welcome to Roy Milner's life. As the chief fermentation officer of this award-winning resort, he makes some of my favorite beer, and I'm not just saying that because he's sitting across from me. The Blackberry Farm Saisons are some of the best representations of the style you'll find, and Roy is one of the best people to drink them with. I know why the late Sam Bell brought him to the farm to make beer. He is one of the good people, and you just gotta be around that. Add beer to the equation? Well, you'll see. We have fun talking yeast strains and more, and let's face it, I'm pretty much a Roy groupie.
Welcome to the Southern Fork, Roy.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. We're actually not at Blackberry Farm right now, although I wish we were.
It's a good place to be this time of year.
But we are actually sitting at Revelry Brewing during happy hour on a Friday. This is a good place to be too, right?
We have a habit when we travel of ending up in breweries because we have a lot of friends in the brewery business. So a brewery on a Friday afternoon is a pretty good place you'll find us if you're traveling.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Blackberry Farm to begin with, because it is an extremely special place. And I'm not sure, before I actually started writing about food, I didn't know Blackberry Farm existed. So Blackberry Farm really is what you would consider a resort property, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And you are the brewer of Blackberry Farm. So you make beer.
Yeah, we have a team. I call myself the chief fermentation officer. Mm-hmm. So all things that go bump in the night, I'm kind of responsible for. But yes, I am a brewer. I don't do a lot of the brewing these days. I'm doing more of the brand representation as I travel and meet our friends and guests around the country. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we started the project in 2010, and at that point, I was doing all the brewing.
And Blackberry Farm is really a beautiful place. You've had a tragedy this year with the death of Sam.
Correct.
But you are moving on mm-hmm. and carrying on his legacy. What is something that Sam taught you about Blackberry Farm, or Sam really, his spirit that you really think about when you're there?
Sam had this unbelievably crystal clear vision of what Blackberry was to be, and it was all centered around warm Southern hospitality, pleasurable experiences, challenging yourself, balance. So the farm's a lot of things for a lot of people, and people come for different reasons. But for me, I think what I learned from Sam was that every guest comes and they have their Blackberry memories, and it's our job to create those memories with them mm-hmm. and help them establish what Blackberry means to them. Mm-hmm. And culinary and beverage is where we tend to fly our flag the highest. But there are a lot of other things at Blackberry Farms. It's a special place to just come and maybe forget about all the other things that are happening in your life at that point in time and take a few days to enjoy the people around you.
I never really believed that there could be a resort in...
It's like Narnia.
Yeah, in rural Tennessee, because to me, resort means palm trees, clear blue water, that sort of thing. But it's very true. It is a magical place. Well, and you work there every day.
I get asked a lot to try to explain it and compare it to other places, and there's just really no comparison. And I hear that from our guests all the time. They're like, we're fortunate to travel. We've been all over the world, but there's no place like Blackberry, and we love coming back. And when you do finally get to come visit us, there are these white fences, and once you cross the threshold of the white fences, everything seems to stay outside, and your experiences inside are Blackberry Farm.
But Saison stays inside.
Well, we're trying to get it everywhere. So it started inside, but we want people to be able to experience it everywhere.
So as I'm somebody who really cut her beverage teeth, I would guess, on cocktails, Saison for me was a really good introduction to craft beer. Mm-hmm. When I discovered Saison, I frankly discovered something I could go to the bar, order, and know as a style that I was going to like that beer. I don't want to be that person at the bar that stands there and has like
right.
that moment. I want to, because I'm not really there for that. I'm there to spend the time with the people that I'm there with. So talk to me about the attraction of Saison as a style for you, Roy, because you, Blackberry Farms and the brewery there has really brought Saison to the American public, I think. You've been one of the champions of it as a style.
We're certainly trying to help. I think every beer drinker that's explored craft or import beers or beers from another place or something that's not familiar to you has had that question of what's your favorite beer? And I can draw a line, a very clear line, back to 2003 when I was having a drinking experience with a friend. We were trying different beers from around the world, and we opened a bottle of Saison DuPont. And it was a perfect afternoon. It was 3 o'clock. We were sitting inside near a bay window in my house, and the sun was shining through. And we poured the beer, and it had this beautiful foam rocky head that looked like meringue. And it was this luminescent golden, and I smelled the beer and tasted it, and I really did have this aha moment of, that's the best beer I've ever had in my life. It's mm-hmm. the best thing I've ever tasted. And that started the love affair. And I was brewing at home a lot, so we started making Saisons. I had the opportunity to go over to Belgium. And in Belgium, in the Wallonia region, where Saisons are that's where they find their heritage. The reverence for agriculture and brewing on farms and rustic and culinary and ritual, it moved me very much. And that began the love affair with Saison as a style. To take that one step further, when I met Sam, we were at a food event and we were talking about beverages and producing beverages and how important it was for beverages to have balance and discipline and finesse and elegance and all these things that we talk about with wine. And he shared with me his desire to produce beverages. And I said, well, I have a history in beer, and I would like to do the same thing. And we're both from Tennessee, and I want to do something in our home state. And I want to do something on a farm. And I want the table to be the genesis of why we're making beer. And it just all came together.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
in East Tennessee, we're fortunate to have 4 unique and distinct seasons. And the word Saison translates into season in French. And we started talking about the narrative of what the farm is. And if you've read our cookbooks or if you come explore our menus, we really let the land and the seasons and what's growing and our natural surroundings determine what's on the table. It was a perfect fit. Mm-hmm. And we decided that Saison was going to be something that we championed.
And Saison is such a beautiful style because it does lend itself so wonderfully to food pairings, which, of course, I know you do a ton at Blackberry Farm. Can you explain for people and me what Saison is as far as a beer style?
Saison is this mysteriously complex yet very simple beverage. The recipes for Saisons are strikingly simple. We make our Saison with one grain of Pilsner malt. We don't do a lot of fancy things with the hop profile. The yeast character and the way we let these beers ferment and age out lends a lot of that kind of beautiful character that you're talking about.
And that's terroir that you really get.
It is terroir, and that's a
just
term
like a wine.
That gets used in wine a lot. We're trying to bring some of that vernacular to beer. But as a particular style, it's hard to pin down. But the things I would say that I love about it at the table are bright acidity, nice dryness, really high effervescence. So if you ask people why they like champagne, they can't always explain it, but there's a sensation in your mouth when you drink a nice champagne of scrubbing your palate. It's like waking you up and exciting you for what's to come. And we tell a lot of our guests that any place you would enjoy a champagne, Saison is a beautiful substitute because you're getting that effervescence, that dryness, that acidity. And that's what you really want at the table, is something that complements, impacts, elevates food. A lot of beers don't do that very well. And they're beers that I like, but they're not necessarily beers that I want to pair with.
Right.
In a culinary perspective.
Because I like all beverages, but not all beverages go with food.
Correct.
And that's why it's very difficult. But that's exactly why I like Saisons, because it is like a sparkling wine, but beer. So it's a good place to start for the evening.
Well, we do tours of our brewery on the farm, and we have a lot of guests that come to the farm specifically for wine. And those are some of my favorite guests, because they tell me right out of the gates, I don't like beer. And I say, maybe you've just never had a beer that spoke to you. And by the end of drinking Saisons, they say, this is not like any beer I've ever had.
Exactly.
That's the aha moment of, okay, this is a different kind of beverages. Mm-hmm. We want you to slow down. We talk about contemplation. We want to connect. We want to sit. We want to share. We want to talk. We want to enjoy each other. I think Saison it's almost a platform to begin that contemplative experience.
And we should probably mention that we're drinking beer right now. So
I think we should.
Cheers.
I would be really ashamed of us if we weren't.
It is what? Happy hour on Friday?
Every hour is happy hour. Some are happier than others.
When we're actually talking about making beer, that's a lot of people's hobby. So how did that translate into a job for you, other than just the synchronicity of meeting Sam and saying, hey, I can do this? I mean, how did that really translate into, I can do this for a living? Because I think a lot of people don't go there when they love something because they're worried that it can't be done.
Much to my parents' chagrin, I studied business in college at the University of Tennessee. And I started homebrewing as a sophomore in school, and I fell in love with the craft. But if you think about
just his cell phone.
Yeah,
ignore him.
How dare you try to call me when I'm in the middle of drinking a beer on a Friday afternoon? I fell in love with this idea of being able to take raw materials and make something that made other people happy. I grew up in a family where we cooked a lot. We gathered around the table. We ate meals together. We had an appreciation for enjoying culinary and beverage. But I hadn't really explored making anything yet. And beer was the first thing I ever made that gave me immense satisfaction. And I saw what happened to other people when they enjoyed something that I made. And I got to the end of my studies at UT, and I decided to completely not pursue anything that I had been learning and go into brewing.
But yeah, you pursued everything that you've been learning.
I
because
hope so.
You followed your passion.
I hope so. Yeah, I think it's worked out okay 20 years later. But I brewed around the Southeast. If you think about what was happening in craft beer in the mid-90s, it was very different than it is today. There weren't.
That was my first Woodchuck cider era.
Ciders are fun too.
But let's not even discuss that. Moving on. Sorry I mentioned it.
Multiple Woodchuck ciders? think maybe.
Oh, you know. You know.
It's okay. We've all had those. But I brewed at three different places around the Southeast. I helped a friend start a beverage brand called Eastern Rivers Brewing Company. We had a great time with that together. What I realized is I was starting to fall in love with the business of beer. I liked making the beer, but I also really enjoyed connecting with guests and consumers and meeting distributors and seeing what made them tick. And that took me to Boston Beer Company. So I worked for Sam Adams for 3 years. And in that capacity, I started selling more than brewing. And I really just fell in love with that part of it. And today, that's predominantly what I do, is kind of build this idea of what Black Berry Farm Brewery really is.
But you have the idea of where you want to go next as far as the flavors and the profiles. When it comes to wild yeast, I think wild yeast is really fascinating.
It is.
I am...
It's all over us right now.
A chemistry nerd. And I think that's super cool and freaky. It's kind of like mushrooms and yeast.
Hey, free ride, no
yeah.
free ride.
Exactly. Like, no, I showered today. Stop talking about it. I recently took a foray into collecting wild yeast to make sourdough bread. And I had this whole week of doing this. I read things on Pinterest. By the way, listeners, Pinterest has never steered me in the right direction. Not once. I will continue to pin and I will continue to read it, but I've done a lot of crazy things after drinking wine and looking at Pinterest.
I knew you were cool, but I just didn't realize you were this cool.
Well, I wanted to make this terroir wild yeast sourdough, so I had this experiment to do this. And I collected a ton. I mean, you know, the yeast makes it bubble and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a direct, immediate feedback. When things are fermenting, you can visually see it.
That's so fun. Yeah, and it bubbles, and if you don't have enough aeration on it, it will explode. As we all know, that's why if you make homebrew anything, you should really do it in your spare bathroom. In the bathtub. It just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, a good pair of safety glasses and a helmet are part of the arsenal that you need if you're going to start homebrewing.
I can see you two beers in with a bike helmet on your head, leaning over a bathtub.
I've had explosions in the middle of the night where you feel like maybe you're in the middle of a war zone and you realize, I know exactly what that was. And then you begin to wonder, how many more are at that point, because there are 48 bottles in there.
And
that's
so
when you put the helmet on in the middle of the night.
And you just go. You deal with it. But wild yeast is a very cool thing. And it really, Greg Engert of Blue Jacket was really the first person to really teach me about wild yeast, because they created this whole room with a little window that like let in the air of the Washington, D.C. Navy Yard to get the wild yeast. So how does the wild yeast of East Tennessee really affect your beer?
That's a great question. If you go all over the world, and I think spontaneous fermentation and cultivation of native yeast and wild yeast is something that has been happening for centuries.
Otherwise known as rotting?
Yes. Yes. Exactly. There's these little customers out there that want to eat anything that has sugar, and that's what happens when you see wild yeast attacking any sugar that's available to them. They're hungry.
So that powdery mildew or film that you see on the outside of those
yeasts.
Grapes?
Those are wild yeasts.
Mm-hmm.
And in East Tennessee in particular, we're fortunate to be in a cove that has never been tainted by GMO infiltration of major crops. We're what are called marginal lands. So we're in an area that has been farmed, go back centuries to the Cherokee Indians that were the first inhabitants of this area. And agriculturally, we have documentation back to the 1500s of crops being grown in our cove, in West Miller's Cove. So the yeast strains that live in this little corridor of the mountains where we live in the foothills of the Smoky Mountains, they're very healthy. They're very robust. They're fantastic fermenters. And the best description I've ever heard of an explanation of brewer's yeast, which is called Saccharomyces, that would be the equivalent of a domesticated dog. So a Labrador. You kind of know what you're going to get. There's an expectation of...
That's a good way to put it.
...of an animal that's predictable.
Mm-hmm.
Wild yeasts are more like wolves. They're related, but they're more unpredictable. And it doesn't mean they're necessarily bad. It just means that you got to be willing to experience a little bit of uncertainty. And what brewers are finding is a lot of these wild yeasts produce dynamic, incredible flavors that once harnessed can really be fascinating.
So what kind of flavor? What are we talking about here? Use some terms that I would know.
The barnyard gets thrown around all the time.
That doesn't sound appetizing.
And that's exactly what most people say. But think about being on a farm and think about walking into a barn and smelling hay and soil and leaves mm-hmm. and flowers and mm-hmm. animals and all these things that it can be a very romantic thing. I like to tell people, have you ever had a cheese that was offensive to your nose in the beginning, but you tasted it and magic happened?
Mm-hmm.
We're challenging people to think about, don't necessarily judge too quickly. Let your sensory take over, close your eyes, experience what it's like of really standing in a field, being on a farm, being in a barn, and drawing that directly back to agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always perfume and flowers and delightful smells. What that does is it challenges our brains to expand what we can comprehend.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's getting kind of heady, but I really do believe that wild yeast afford us these opportunities to get to know a beverage that's mysterious. It's fun. It's interesting. And it's slightly unpredictable.
So you really think of beer as an experience.
Absolutely. I always talk about experiential tasting.
Mm-hmm.
It should be an experience. And not just in the flavors, auditory, hearing a cork come out of our bottle.
Because your bottles are corked.
They are. We package in champagne bottles. And that's part homage and respect to where these beers came from in Wallonia, which is right on the border with France. So if you think about where we are in the world, we're very close to the Champagne region. There's a lot of sensibilities that are shared of Saison and Champagne. But also visual, seeing a nice bottle come out to the table, seeing the ritual of presentation, seeing a wine glass and beer going into it, and a nice stack of foam on there, slowing down, taking a chance to look at it, smell it, swirl it, look at it in the light, drink it. It's not just the flavor that I'm talking about. It's everything. It's about sharing. I read a book 8 or 9 years ago. Carlo Petrini from Slow Food wrote the book that changed everything for me. I realized that his notion of food should be good, it should be clean, it should be fair. The people that grow it should be part of the equation. They shouldn't be in third world situations. They shouldn't be in situations in poverty. We should be willing to pay people for their efforts and their time. And it draws people back to the land. It draws people back to each other. It's about pleasure. We have this notion in America that I think the word pleasure is a little bit of a mischievous, dirty thing. And I think that notion is not correct. Pleasure is ultimately what we seek.
We ultimately seek to be happy.
Enjoy each other.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy experiences. Enjoy our families. And hopefully our work.
Mm-hmm.
Our life's pursuits. So I think it all goes back to that about... And that's what's so cool about craft beer right now is the community of craft beer.
And I've experienced that for sure.
It's very benevolent.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's willing to help each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I shouldn't say everyone. That's a gross generalization. But a lot of us want to see each other do better. And there's you've probably been in the crosshairs of wine and beer and what's better. And I think that's silly. They're both beautiful.
I think
and
all
we tend
of it
to love
is
each
interesting.
Other. Like,
right.
Yeah, let's just prop each other up. People should be drinking great things at all times in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Morning, afternoon, evening. And for me, late evening, I'm kind of nocturnal.
Yeah, I definitely am an early riser, so I'm not as late night as I used to be. But I do think it is more of a mindful kind of approach that you're suggesting is to really think about it. Think about that beverage accompanying the food, not just picking something because you know it, but actually expanding your palate through beverage as well as through food.
Well, I think the average person, or just think about the people that you know in your life, your friends, your family, your coworkers, most of us will have the opportunity in a given day to eat 3 or 4 times. What we do with that is our responsibility. Do we enjoy it? Are we eating on the fly? Are we rushing through it? Is it a means to an end? I think it's the time for us to really reflect on how fortunate we are and to think about source and ingredients and process and have that experience of nourishing our bodies, but also connecting with people that are growing things and making things. And it comes down to the clothes that we wear and the cars that we drive and the people that we associate with. And I do think it's a bigger notion of the way we live. And beer has a place in there. It's an affordable luxury. I'd love to try some of the finest wines in the world, but one, they're not available, and two, if they were, I couldn't afford them. The best beers in the world can often be had through trading or building a relationship with a brewery, and it's an affordable luxury.
Mm-hmm. Well, Blackberry Farm and the saisons that you create are just beautiful, affordable luxury. So,
thank you.
I am thrilled to be able to have the chance to sit down with you today. And thank you so much for being on the Southern Fork.
Absolutely. I've enjoyed it.
If people are interested in Blackberry Farm, as well as Roy's very cool champagne bottles, saisons, and other brews, they can go to thesouthernfork.com and check it out. But there's nothing like tasting for the experience. So I would suggest that you definitely, if you see it on a menu, try it out. Wouldn't you suggest that to you, Roy?
I would absolutely suggest that.
Well, thanks for chatting with me today, and let's have another beer.
Let's do it. Thanks.
You've been listening to The Southern Fork. I can't wait to bring you more culinary conversations, but in the meantime, I have one question. Are you going to eat all that?